And we're off. Good. All right, let's go. Let's have a look at all these wonderful devices. Right, that's one thing I never had a view graph for in the last lecture, which I should put up. Remember we talked about scattering parameters and S-parameter matrices or scattering matrices. So here's the detailed diagram for you. Tom, you're worried about VIs and VOs and everything. Rightio, A, the A label goes with the first port. This is a four-port device, okay? Also 1, 2, 3, 4. A1 is the input forward voltage or whatever. That's why it's called A. It could be voltage or current. And A2 is the reflected. Well, when I say reflected, it's not actually reflected. It also consists of the power contributions from the input voltages at all the other ports, which are transferred back to the input. So A2 is actually what comes out of A1. Can't fly back in your face when you put signal in. If it's matched, then A2 will never be finite if there are no other inputs from C1, D1 and B1. Okay, because A1 of its own accord cannot cause A2 if S11 is zero. In other words, if there's no reflection, it's a terminated four-port. Okay, the type we're going to be dealing with in this lecture. So there's that scattering matrix there describes how to get A2 given A1, B1, C1 and D1. And you can see it's given by pouring the rows of the scattering matrix into the column vector D. Okay, for those of you who've been brought up in the mathematical world, that's what I mean by the scattering matrix. And a four-port device, which is matched, has, what can you tell me about the make of the diagonal? They're all zero. S11, S22, S33, the leading diagonal is zero, that's correct. All right, so there's a picture of it, a mathematical picture of it. Mathematicians can take that, and reciprocity and everything else. Our reciprocity, by the way, implies that S12 equals S21, S23 is S32, and so on. Okay? All right. Let's just do a little bit of mathematics. I showed this view graph in less detail in the last lecture. Assume that the four port is matched, and assume that from any port half the power appears at two other ports. For example, consider waves that propagate from ports A and B to ports C and D. Okay, so I'll just go back to the original picture. This is so A and B over to C and D. Rightio. Now, if half the power is distributed between the two, we have a forward wave propagating with a 1 over root 2 factor, and phi AC simply means the phase shift in going from A to C. Okay. Now, along the lines of the last lecture when I was doing that proof about three-port devices, I managed to prove that in the last lecture that three-port devices can never be simultaneously lossless, matched and reciprocal. One can do a similar sort of proof. If you compute the input power, if they're both, say, 1 watt on A and B, you get 2. And if you take these two and you multiply each of them by their complex conjugate and you take half the real part, as one does with complex powers, then you end up with this expression here or this expression here for the phase shifts, okay? Simple power conservation leads to a yes?
Where do you get the 1 over root 2?
1 over root 2. It's important. If you have those signals, A1 and B1, which we're providing as input of voltages or currents, for example, then in order, when they split between two ports, so that half the power goes out the C port and half goes out the D port, then that means that V1 and V1 must appear with a 1 over root 2 factor, multiplying, dividing them, okay? So that's implied by power conservation. So you'll see here I'm not treating a general four-port device at all. I'm only treating one, which I'm assuming is going to behave like a splitter, a power splitter, okay? And one other important thing to notice about it is that if all the power is coming out C and D, then B and A are isolated from each other, okay? I'm assuming it's a power splitter. That means it's got to conserve power on two. Split means two outputs, okay? All right, so we get this formula down the bottom. And if we start with that, and let's suppose that the phase shift between AC and AD is zero, then in that case, then you can show that at least one of the outputs B must be 180 degrees. I don't have it on the view graph here. Yeah, but anyway, if If phi AC and AD are both zero, then that means that BC and BD must be zero and 180 degrees. Right? You can I should have actually said it here in actual words, but you can see it's satisfied by this. If this is zero and this is zero, then if BC is zero, then BD must be 180 degrees for that to add to zero. Okay? So what that's saying is, well, let's look at our 180 degree hybrid. Here's A and B, they're isolated from each other. I've got it around the wrong way. This is, I copied off the web, obviously, and it's around the wrong way. But you can see that if BC and BD are zero, then A is zero, but there's a 180 degree port at the output as well. In other words, D is 180 degrees out of phase with A. If you put a signal in A, then it appears at C unshifted, or relatively shifted, and B, it appears at D, such that D and C are 180 degrees out of phase. Similarly, if you choose A, C, and A, D to be 90 degrees out of phase, then you can show that this arrangement occurs. Here's A this time, back to front in the same person's publication. Anyway, it's got minus 90 to D and 0 to 0. You can show that B also consists of quadrature outputs, so that D and C are always 90 degrees shifted from each other. Okay, this device here is called a rat race, and this device here, well, is a 180 degree hybrid. There are various incarnations of both of them. That's just another picture of different types of 90 degree hybrids. All right, now, I've finished that. That's the end of theory for this lecture. From now on, we're going to look at how to implement them and what you can do with them, okay? And the main topics are combiners, splitter combiners, they're the main use for these, if not the major use, directional couplers, and 90 degree phase shifters, obviously. Okay. And balans. We're also going to look at balans. I don't know if you've heard that term before, it's a particular type of transformer. All right, to implement 180 degree style hybrids, the best way below about 500 megahertz is to use a transmission line transformer. And a transmission line transformer is nothing but a transformer, as I said yesterday, in which you have multi-fiber windings. In other words, you can buy a fiber if you have two, as I've drawn it up on the board there. Two wires that are close together, maybe heat shrunk together or even glued together with silicone and wrapped around a ferrite core. And I'll show you some real ones in the lab this afternoon, if you remember to ask me. We have ferrite cores in the drawers there. You order the ferrite cores, have the property that they have high relative permeability at high frequencies, and you pick them for the frequency range. When you wind your coils on the core, then that core has a big inductance. And that big inductance is important. It's the main thing that it has to satisfy. You might remember in an earlier lecture, I asked you why it is that mains power transformers are so big and fat and so heavy. And the only reason was to get their inductance up. Well, it's the same reason here. It's not due to mutual coupling. It's due to improvement of increase in inductance. All right. So these diagrams are simply meant to draw your attention to the similarity between transmission lines and transformers. Implicitly, you might have noticed that if you think of them as four-port devices rather than two-port devices, then in which two ports are grounded, that is, then in fact they have exactly the same properties. For example, you knew that transmission lines have equal and opposite currents on the line. There's always two lines in a transmission line, one going back and one going forward, parallel side by side, and each must carry combination must carry zero net current, or otherwise you've got an antenna. Let's face it, you have a current then, whose magnetic fields are exposed to the free space around, it will behave like an antenna. And I'll show you a picture in a little while about how you make an antenna from a transmission line, okay? It's a kind of condo diagram that serves two purposes. And you can see the transformer has, now this is interesting, also has equal and opposite currents in this simple situation. So let's look at that in a little more detail. Just suppose we take, here's a simple transformer. and we just terminate that transformer. That can be grounded in, say, Z0, which is 50 ohms, and we drive that, okay? What's going to happen here is we have a certain current flowing in this load, as you know, because of the transformer action. And you know that this voltage here is equal to the input voltage, and the output voltage, you know that from simple transformer theory, is equal to the input voltage for a one-to-one transformer. On the other hand, this voltage V out is just equal to IZ naught, where I is the current flowing. Well, if I is the current flowing in here, then and these are the dots on the transformer, then this I must flow out, and you get IZ naught, and V naught and VI are in phase, and the currents in the transformer are in phase. Simple case, right? Right. Now, why is it that these currents are equal and opposite in the transformer in the first place? Well, imagine that this was an inductor here, and JX multiplied by I were in series with Z naught, and so we have JX plus Z naught times I equals some voltage I'll call U. Okay? Let's suppose Z naught's 50 ohms, and let's suppose X, which is the open circuit inductance of that coil, is 5,000 ohms. Okay? U is going to be mighty big, 5,000 volts, instead of being 50 volts for 1 amp. Okay? Clearly that's not going to happen. Who knows why it is that that very high open circuit inductance of the transformer is not playing a role here. What's happening to cancel it? This is one way of putting the question, although it requires a somewhat deeper understanding than the mathematical one I gave you before. You understood that mathematically. Usually in describing a transformer, there are three parameters, aren't there? There's the primary inductance and the secondary inductance. And in all the examples I'm showing in this lecture, and all of them practically in existence, those two inductances are the same in transmission line transformers. But there's a third parameter, and that's the mutual inductance. The mutual inductance is the clue here. What happens? Yeah, it cancels it. Exactly. How can it cancel it, though? There are two things that have to be satisfied in order for it to cancel. One of them automatically is, and I'll tell you what it is. The two inductances are equal, but the mutual inductance is pretty much equal to the inductance as well. Okay, but what else has to happen in order to cancel the flux in that core and prevent it from developing a ridiculously high voltage on its terminals? Z0 is low. That's important. Z0 has to be much lower than X. That's true.
So the bindings to the magnetic field is canceling.
Yes. More or less, you're right. The current is flowing in equal and opposite directions in the coils. The windings are already designed, like you said. That's the way I describe a transmission line transformer. You wind the windings by fiber, very close to each other on the core. Okay, that's important. But what's most important is that when you have that situation, those two currents are travelling in opposite directions into the dot on the transformer, into the same winding. Therefore, their magnetic fields completely cancel in the core. That's how the X disappears. There's really another term, minus X, due to the mutual inductance of the primary, which I did not include in that bottom equation. But if you did the mathematics properly, it would automatically be there, right? That process is called flux minimization, and it's important for transmission lines to act like transformers to act like transmission lines. And you can now start to see the beauty of transmission line transformers. You can never get a transmission line to work at low frequency like that. If your transmission line, you can try it yourself, is just coaxial cable, okay? There's a typical transmission line you've seen. Let's suppose we want to couple two signals, V1 and V2, across this coaxial line as if it were a transformer. It's not going to work because the turns are effectively short-circuited. The flux minimization we're talking about here does not occur. On the other hand, it works for a transformer, so all you've got to do is make the transformer act like a transmission line, and you can have something that works over a very broad range of frequencies as a transformer. And the way you do it is by connecting the bifilar winding simply on a core in which the relative permeability is high enough to cancel the flux even at low frequencies. All right, so rules for transmission line transformers. Always wind the windings in a multi-filer fashion. In other words, don't do the following. If you've got a toroidal core, don't wind the thing like this. Right? Separate it from each other, because at high frequencies, the relative permeability will drop to one. The thing won't act anymore as a transformer, but it really wants to be a transmission line at high frequencies. That thing will never be a transmission line. You've got to use multi-filer windings, which means that if you put the windings on the core, they have to do this, nice and snug and close together. In actual fact, the characteristic impedance of the transmission line is dependent precisely on how you wind this and how their relationship, geometric relationship, is to each other. There are these magic devices called ferrites that make this technology possible, and they're usually the best. Sometimes you can just use an air core. The dot on the you understand about the dots on the transformers, I think, by now. The voltage drop across all windings must be the same.
When I say it must be, I mean it is.
You don't have to guarantee it. It's like that. Why is that the case? So linking the same flux, everything. They're identical in space. That's your first mathematical result you need to know to solve mathematically a toroidal transformer. Righto, the currents are in the same direction in the windings must sum to zero, and I'll just explain why that's the case. Right, now the final thing is an interesting thing. Transmission lines have an issue, right? When you have a transmission line, the phase of the signal here is not the same as the phase of the signal down here. Therefore, technically, you should not connect an input voltage across the transmission line from the input right to the output like that. Otherwise, when the transformer starts to behave as a transmission line, it'll have issues with phase shifts along the line that could cause trouble. In that sense, a transformer is not like a transmission line, but when you get to high frequencies with a transmission line transformer and you're hoping for it to behave as a transmission line, then you better be careful about this phase shift issue. Now, I'll speak more about that in a minute. And it's important. The problem is that you can design transmission line transformers either taking that into account or ignoring it. And it actually gives rise to two completely different types of Balun that are used commonly in practice. And I'll speak about those when we talk about Balun's. All right. Now, in the last lecture, I introduced, here's the first transmission line that you'll ever meet. It's the hybrid combiner. This is not matched, this version of it. I'll show you some that are in a minute. The hybrid combiner is a four-port device. Okay, you can see one of the transformer windings. It's tri-filer. That means that those three wires are actually wound on the same core side by side. And like I said, multi-filer before, this is tri-filer for three. And it has the property, we went through the mathematics in the last lecture, I don't know. It's on the web actually in boring detail, this particular device, because I discovered it independently. When I was a student in plasma physics, one of the things you always want to do is to convert a differential measurement back to being single-ended. And the process, if you just get one way to do it, of course, is you just get a transformer and do this. This is the beginner's way of doing it. Okay, there's a differential measurement, so you do this. And then you terminate that in 50 ohms like a good boy. You'll know you've got to match it. And you hope that will do differential measurements for you. But luckily, you're lucky if it will, right? Simple transformer like that won't work. Why? Because the flux minimization means this is not a hybrid. It's not a four-port device. It's a four-port device, but it's not a matched four-port device. And the problem with it is that signal just turns the corner. So if you've got this from two completely different sources that are themselves not matched, then you've got a signal coming along here, gets up there, reflected back, goes around like a merry-go-round, and before you know it, you've got rubbish here. Simple transformers like that don't work. The solution is this. The output port here is the difference voltage. Obviously, you can see the difference voltage there, V. And look at the dots. You see these transformers are directly across the input. This signal here is half the difference in the voltage. This signal here takes the common mode signal of these two lines, in other words, the sum, and it ends there. And it has the amazing property that this line doesn't know about this line at all, and this line doesn't know about this one. And hybrids are crucial, not just in avoiding these situations, but also, what happens if you've got 200 kilowatt transmitters? You're not going to connect them together to get 200 kilowatts. What are you going to do? You're going to use a hybrid. And what the way the hybrid works is when one 100 kilowatt, this is how they television stations work, right? They always have two transmitters side by side. When one goes down, you don't see a blank on your TV screen. That'd be hopeless. So what they do is they say, well, the probability of both going down is so low that it's never going to happen. So we have two. And they combine them through a combiner, like this. So when one goes down, the other transmitter, instead of getting all of your power, suppose they're in phase here, okay, then this signal out here is the sum of the two signals. If you match it with a suitable matching transformer, and I'll show you some of those in a minute, those Balun transformers, then the total power comes out here of these two here, and nothing goes into this load. But this load has to be here. They both have to be terminated in Z naught, which in television space is 75 ohms, not 50 ohms, okay. And when both of them are there, you get the full power at the output. When one transmitter goes down, you can unplug it. It doesn't even care if the port where V2 is terminated or not, you can unplug it. And what happens then is that device transfers 50% of V1's power into the plus output and 50% into the minus. So that minus is what's called a reject or a dummy load. It sits there sucking up the power when transmitter V2 goes down. Then they fix up V2 and they connect it back into the hybrid, and then all the power comes out the plus terminal again. Right. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I did that mathematically yesterday on the board. Were you here? Yeah, you were. I did it on the board. I think it's done on the web. If it's not done on the web, I'll do it this afternoon in the lab. Is that all right? Because I'm running out of time. Okay, there's the hybrid. There are lots of incarnations of these. I won't go into any more detail to explain. Righto. Oh, there's one problem with this one. It does not obey the phase matching principle. Why? Because the dots of this transformer, this transmission line, are facing at the wrong end of the coil. You have to have the dot here and the dot here. So to overcome the phase problem, there's a slightly more complicated version of the same thing. This here is the reject load. You'll notice that it's balanced because it's a plus-minus output. But the load we want, this is a much better transformer. This one you can make work. When you make high-power hybrid combiners, they get big. The ferrite get big, the cores get big. And therefore, at any given frequency, the phase shifts get a lot worse. And so it becomes more important to observe the phase principle. Now you'll notice that the dots are always... You can definitely see the difference between input and output here. These guys at the input are at least on a dot. This guy's an output, he's at least on a dot. And this guy's an output, he's at least on the non-dot. There's no mixing of the dots. Those mixing of the dots causes phase-shifted currents to be added into the load, and that destroys the operation of the combiner. All right, this is a much simpler device. This is the Wilkinson combiner, or the Magic T. I'll let you analyse this device. It consists of two. It also obeys the phase adding principle. The pluses are here. The dots are it disobeys it. The dots. This is the way this is wound. These are two bifilar windings, but the way the circuit's drawn, it's like one turn, but it's really two bifilar windings, and you add the output of one to the input of the other, and you terminate this in a dummy load of 150 ohms, and you can see this is a matched system now. It's also a three-port device, and it's an example of a three-port device that has built-in loss, 150 ohms, in order to achieve a match. So the way this works, normally this would be the output. You apply your two signals in phase here and here, and all of the signal comes out here, and this resistor has nothing across it, provided these two points are driven in phase. And when One of these goes down, the 150 ohm takes all the power, and the other port doesn't notice that one of the other transmitters gone down. So that's a simpler device. It's actually, because it only has two windings, it's easier to build than a hybrid combiner, but you can't make it matched like this, okay? Except by putting in this 150 ohm resistor, because it's a three-port device. So that's the Wilkinson combiner. That's probably the easiest one to build if you ever have to do a low-power job. All right? Here's a version of it. It's completely different now. It's got three windings, and this one is matched regardless, without the help of internal resistors. So it actually has four windings now, because these are really two windings wound together. It's still disobeying the phase sum principle, because the dot is joined to a non-dot here. That's the thing you want to avoid if you don't want out-of-phase currents to be added together at any point in the circuit. And you can see it's a television thingy with a half the characteristic impedance there. So you could, this is a splitter. So the signal coming in here is split to 0 and 180 degrees here. It's a 180 degree hybrid. Similarly, this is the, when you put two signals in here and here that are in phase, then all of the signal goes out here. Each of these sees 75 ohms. Neither of these know about each other. And when these are in phase, nothing comes out this load, which is the reject load. So using the current summing principle, I'll do an example of this in a tutorial at 11 o'clock, show you how to analyse these. They're very easy to analyse with those simple rules about transmission line transformers. The voltages across any of these turns, so there's V, V and 2V, and the currents must all sum to zero. When you do that, these things just fall out. So I'm gliding through them here. Here I've stolen somebody's work off the web. Somebody obviously felt the need to build a Wilkinson combiner, and you do a lot when you're doing RF. Here's an example of one. It's the first one I showed you, except it's got some extra matching resistors on the out. Well, they look like they're amortization resistors more than anything. They're made to look, make a reactive impedance there look like whatever it's supposed to be, maybe 50 ohms here, when in fact it's a very reactive and unmatchable load. And there's what it looks like in practice. You can see there's some BNC connectors. He's got the dead bug urge like you guys have. He's got these just a couple of turns wound on a ferrite that looks like it was meant to be used as a transformer. It's got two holes and it's long like that, and you put your windings through the holes like that, and you can see it must be a toroidal thing. I can see the windings on the outside there. I think that's what they are, so it's probably, they're two different varieties. You can get a cylindrical ferrite with a hole in it, and this one over here, you can definitely see it's this variety here, and he's got this 100 ohm resistor sitting right over the top of it there. It looks very familiar to you guys anyway, doesn't it? Classic dead bug, except for the fact that the ferrite has no legs. And down the bottom here, this is a narrow band implementation with lumped elements of a Wilkinson combiner without a transformer. So you can do that too, but it's only narrow band, okay? Alright.
Does that match capital loss? Can you match that to have no loss?
To have no loss?
So, to match, just say you're 50 ohms on input.
Yeah.
On both.
Yes.
And then that's why you choose that element.
I don't know the answer to that. I have to think about it. Yep. I know you can do this. I've never designed one. Yeah, what Tom's asking is, can you choose the L and the C so you get rid of that R? I don't know if that's possible with a Wilkinson, but it is possible definitely with the hybrid that I showed you before, the hybrid combiner. All right. This is another magic device. 90 degree phase shifts are usually impossible over wide ranges of frequency at RF, but there's a way to do it. And that's the circuit. It's a basic building block. You need many of these usually. Normally you put two of them in parallel arms, and it's the relative phase shift at their output that is maintained at 90 degrees over a large range of frequencies. And it's ideal for converting I have to connect to a 180-degree hybrid in order to make a 90-degree hybrid. Okay, so if you're building your hybrids based on transmission line transformers, this is the way to go. So this is a transformer. The dots are upside down. There's a capacitor to ground, and that's all there is to it. Okay? Okay. Ooh. Oh, and that's going to sleep on me, luckily. No, the dots are at opposite ends, means you've got to wind it like this. You've got a transformer like this. The dots are, say, there now, okay? So the way this is wound is there's one input. The capacitor's like that, and the output's over there. Much more complicated that way, but... That's why I didn't draw it that way. Although it's normal, it's nice to draw it that way if you want to use solve to solve it, but otherwise it's not nice. You get it? Notice I just flipped the dots around. It's the magic of pictures. You can't do it on a real transformer. Flip them around the other way. Disobeys a few laws of combinatorial theory, I'm sure. Okay? Right? All right. So there's the mathematics of it. Look at that for a transfer function. That's the exact solution. Provided it's a transmission line transformer in the sense that the mutual inductance between the coils is equal to the self-inductance. And otherwise, it just acts as a transformer. But notice that the L is needed in this because we need to choose L. Once we choose our center operating frequency, which is omega P, you choose C and L like this, then you got that. And now, the problem with a thing like that, as Tom will readily realize, is that the transfer function 1 minus J on 1 plus J like that doesn't give you 90 degrees. So how in the heck do you get 90 degrees? Well, the answer is you have two of them. And you put the same signal in here and here, then these two are 90 degrees out of phase. Okay? Which is exactly what you want to do for the 180-degree hybrid, okay? So just to give you, I did some... There's an example, 25 to 45 megahertz. It's not exactly staggering range of frequencies, okay? But you can do any range you like by stacking them in series, okay? And you can design... I've only done a design here for one of these... or two in parallel, a pair in parallel. So there's the relative 90 degree phase shift between the two outputs. It's pretty darn good from 25 to 45, almost a factor of two. But these two curves here, on the other hand, are the phase shifts of each individual output with respect to the input. And it's this difference here which is 90 degrees. So you can see this is nothing in particular. Okay? So that's how that works. And there's how you would make a 90-degree phase hybrid. Get the Wilkinson combiner or the hybrid combiner I showed you before and add two of those. Well, each of those things with a 90 on them is actually one of these guys. This building block I showed you up here, this one here. Okay, that's it. And now you've got yourself a 90-degree hybrid. Starting to look a bit complicated, though, isn't it? And in actual fact, you can make these with strip line much more easily than that, but you have to pay a lot more attention to geometry when you do that manufacture. All right, directional couplers. Now, you've seen this on the web. This is not actually, in this particular case, it's not an example of a hybrid, but directional couplers, you should know how they work. Travelling waves on a line obey these laws, okay? You notice that the introduction of the minus sign here for the reflected wave, so that when the voltage is positive, and the current points that way, the wave's going that way, the current's pointing that way, it's going that way, current points in the direction of travel. Well, you can use that to sense individually the forward and the reflected voltage. All you do is put a good old voltage divider on the line that divides down the voltage by N, and you put a little device called a current transformer, and a current transformer is nothing more. Here's the line. You put a toroidal ferrite around it, like this. These are almost foolproof devices to build. And you wind it. It is, in fact, a sort of a transmission line transformer. It's at least another application of a ferrite. You just wind it around the line. The flux minimization principle says that these currents are now proportional to one another in the ratio of the number of turns N of the current transformer. And so we end up with that. And provided you choose this resistor equal to Z0, you develop a voltage given by I Z0 times N, And I think you can easily see that if you add and subtract these two, you individually get the forward and the reflected voltage. So directional couplers are easy. Up to about 50 megahertz, this is the way to do it. Beyond about 50 megahertz, you use the type of, that we have in the lab, the NADA directional coupler. All right, Balans. Now I just want to quickly go through Balans. Balan is an impedance and balance matching transformer. And I have to explain what's meant by balance and unbalance, which I'll do in a second. I was talking about the fact that transmission line transformers should respect phase. And this has led to two classes of devices, Balans, ones that do respect phase and ones that don't. Okay? The advantage of not respecting phase, like every kind of anarchy in life, right, is that you get more options. So there are many more different types of phase non-respecting transformers than there are ones that do, but they work worse. Okay? And so it depends on what versatility you need. And the names, you should know about these. Bavaria is spelt wrong. There's no E on the end of Bavaria. Guanella, working for Brown Bavaria a long time ago, as you can see. Oh, he was even longer than Ruthroff. Ruthroff is the IEEE publication, or the IRE publication. It's the big, whopping great publication. How many pages in it? Oh, he's only got about six pages. But anyway, it's right there. But it's jam-packed full of little circuits. That's all it is. Guanella's publication is only about one thing, and I'll show you his transformer in a minute. So there's an example of the variety you get from disrespecting rules. And these are used to match, Balans are used to match unbalanced to balanced lines and vice versa. There are also this term unans used to match unbalanced to unbalanced lines. So let's have a look at what that means. A balanced system is one in which is symmetric or push-pull with respect to its voltage drive. Driven by, there are two lines, and a transmission line, an antenna or a transformer or whatever, or a resistor. You push them 0 and 180 degrees out of phase on either end of the resistor. Okay? Symmetrical push-pull. An unbalanced system usually means one is connected to earth and therefore cannot be driven. Coaxial cable, as you usually in the lab, is like that. You've got a B and C connector, it's got an outer earth thing. That's an unbalanced line, unbalanced system. Okay. So the question naturally arises as to how can you connect a balanced antenna or transmission line to an unbalanced coaxial transmission line? You can't plug them in. If a an antenna is expected to be driven 0 and 180 degrees out of phase on each of its inputs, you can't do that with coax. You can do it with two coaxes, but you still need to have those driven 180 degrees out of phase somehow. That's the job of a balance. Okay? But balance also do impedance matching over broad ranges of frequency. Before in this course, you've seen impedance matching at one frequency only. Okay? But when you have to match 50 to, say, 200 ohms, then you don't want to have a match at a single frequency. You want to have it at a whole lot of frequencies. For that, you need balance. All right. You need to respect it. Here's an example of it. Here's coax, typical coax. The voltage, it's alive on the inner conductor and grounded on the outside. And here's a typical antenna driven. Here's a transmission line. Okay, it's a strip line or a twin wire line. To make a dipole antenna out of it, you just fan its arms out like this so the current's no longer balanced. The currents are going in opposite directions here. When this starts to spread out, they're actually going in the same direction. That was Rosanta's question before. How do you drive 0 and 180 when all you've got 0? That's the question, okay? All right, so let's look at the simplest one of them all. This is a one-to-one balun. This one matches 50 ohms to 50 ohms, but it'll take you from 50 ohms here to two series combinations of 25 ohms split at ground where the terminal 5 is at ground, and that's all there is to it. That's what it is. This is a balun, because this is unbalanced and this is balanced. These two ports are balanced. You can maybe call it an unbal, but I've never heard that term before, even though I mistakenly used it at the beginning of the last lecture. And all you've got is these two currents are forced equal and opposite. If you then define this resistor as equal with respect to ground, equal currents will flow in both and generate opposite phases. All right. I think it's this lecture's over now. But there are some examples of 1 to 4 impedance matching, Ruthroff, Unnans and Ballans there. We'll go through those in the tutorial. And there's Guanella's Ballan that he published. You can see it's much more complicated. It's also a 4 to 1 Ballan, and you can immediately see how it respects phase. And finally, my last view graph. You must have seen these before. These are the only Ballans that the common person ever gets to see. The ones that go on television. Well, used to go on television. Now that televisions are mostly coaxial, you'll only see that Ballan up at the antenna. So antennas are always symmetric. They're always push-pull. But if you run coaxial cable, 75 ohm coax up at the antenna, you need a Ballan. And there is one, and it's a. You can see it's got this. What do you call them? F-type, not F-type connector. I've got what they're called here, where the coaxial cable screws on. That's a skirt, a jacket for the coax, and the Ballan is located in there. And there are the two wires, push-pull, that hook out onto your antenna. Okay. And this device over here is the one you normally plug in your television set, I think. No, I thought it was. It should have a 75 ohm connector there, and then this, the 300 ohm ribbon cable. 300 is 4 times 75, goes on those two bolts at the time. There. Okay. See what 11 is.